Hey, landlords, are you ready to level up your rental game and simplify your life? Well, get ready to meet your new best friend, KeyCheck. KeyCheck is your all-in-one solution for stress-free property management with tenant-paid screenings, rent payment processing, online lease creation with eSign, and a suite of incredible landlord tools. You'll wonder how you ever lived without it. No more chasing down checks or sifting through piles of applications. KeyCheck helps you organize and manage all things landlording in a simple and efficient way. So if you're tired of the rental chaos and crave seamless, efficient management, head over to KeyCheck.com and sign up today. Make landlord life a breeze with KeyCheck, the game changer for modern property owners.
Welcome to Landlord Diaries, where we talk about midterm rentals and the opportunities behind them. We'll share landlord stories, talk about maximizing investment potential, and discuss how to live the very best landlord life. This podcast is proudly brought to you by Furnished Finder, the place for everything midterm rentals. Remember to like and subscribe if you enjoy our content.
It's your host team of the Landlord Diaries, Kelly Bailey and Katie Lyon. We come to you from the marketing department of Furnished Finder, here to tell you everything about midterm rentals. And Katie, I notice your background is a little different today. I see some luggage back there. What is happening in your world?
Some luggage. We are getting ready to go on a big trip to Europe. We've been trying to go on this trip since 2020 when clearly no one went anywhere. So the day is finally almost here. And I'm so excited. And as you guys hear, I have my raspy voice on. So hopefully my health can stick in there too. And we can, make it through all of this. But today,
your sexy voice,
my sexy voice, man, it's in full force. So today we get to talk to Jillian, and Jillian is the expert in all things lighting. And she also has done a house hack and arbitrage. And now she's working on another house hack potentially. So it was really fun to talk to her and talk not only about her house hack and how she manages things like house rules and making sure everyone gets along, but also things like decorative lighting and security purposed lighting. So that was really good. And even if you just take a couple of nuggets away, it can make a big impact on, how safe your tenants feel at your property, or just maybe even how good it looks in those photos. So we hope you enjoy. And please remember that today's episode and every episode is brought to you by Furnished Finder, where you can list your midterm rental for $99 a year. Enjoy.
Today we travel to the suburbs of Chicago, Illinois to talk with Jillian McMorris. Jillian has chosen to embrace real estate through monthly furnished house hacking. She also has a W-2 role that combines quite nicely with a real estate portfolio. She is the Chief Improvement Officer at Nightlight Inc., a company focused on improving security through lighting at your home. We will break up this episode into three parts. Part one will be Jillian's house hack and past and present arbitrage condos. Part two will be improving lighting at night with your real estate portfolio. Part three will be how Jillian has implemented Nightlight at her home. Jillian, thanks for being here with us today. How's it going?
Going really well. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Yes, ma'am. So Jillian and I actually met at the Midterm Rental Summit. What did you think? How was the summit for you?
Oh, I loved it. I could not believe how much value I gained from that. I love networking and meeting other people and hearing their stories. And I walked out buzzing. Jesse was a great host too. So I was really, really appreciative of the opportunity.
He did a great job, didn't he? Like, just so much heart behind what he does. I love that. And knowledge. Heart and knowledge together is hard to beat.
Yeah.
What were some of those big takeaways that you're trying to implement from the conference?
I think trying not to follow too many different paths, but just how much breadth there is in terms of strategy within the midterm rental world. Like both on the acquisition side and the disposition side, I was just like, my mind was blown. And so much, I think that I was craving going into it was not just tips and tricks, but mindset focus that's specific to midterm rentals. I've been to a lot of short-term rental events where I'm picking up, you know, the pieces and parts and systems that can apply across into midterm rentals, but it's so vacation focused, and to have a bunch of people who are focused on some of those markets that I can really resonate with was just mind blowing for me.
Awesome. That's great.
Okay. So tell us about your current and your past real estate portfolio over the past couple of years and how you have grown it.
Okay. So a couple of years ago, I moved back to Chicagoland from out of state, end of 2020. And in the spring of 2021, I purchased a condo. I had just started learning about real estate investing in general at the time. So when I purchased it, all I could think of was buy something where I know at some point I'm allowed to rent it out. That was all I had to think about. During that time, I listened to a lot of podcasts and reached out to a lot of people and developed a little bit of a local network. And in the midst of it, I started learning about midterm rentals and got really interested in that. I was in a one bed, one bath condo. So I heard about how there's a lot of opportunity there, but I was still living in my condo. So I also looked into arbitrage, and as fate would have it, the unit above me in my building, the folks ended up getting evicted, unfortunately. But during that process, I developed a relationship with the landlord who owned that condo and asked him if I could rent it out. I'm your friendly neighbor downstairs. I have a good job. I manage people. I manage projects. And I'm right in the building. Would you rent it to me and allow me to sublease it out as a furnished rental? And he loved that idea. He never heard anything like that. And we developed a really positive relationship. So my very first property was in arbitrage. And then I ended up moving out of my little condo down below, and leaving it furnished and couch surfing essentially with family and friends for 6 months almost, and renting out both of them. At the end of fall of last year, I had to leave them behind. Our building was purchased as one whole unit, so it was deconverted back from condos into apartments. So my condo was sold and Marco's condo was sold. And so I lost control of those two condos. Spoiler alert, I'm trying to get back into that building now.
Really?
Yeah. Because it was going so well. And I approached the new owners recently and they just gave me a call back. So I'm excited about that. But that hasn't come to fruition yet. So after the condos last year, I purchased a 3-bed, 2-bath single family home, just a neighborhood over from where I lived before. That was really ideal. Again, it's the suburbs of Chicago, so we're on a train line near some major hospitals, very close to O'Hare Airport. So it was going really well for me with the condos. So I figured I would move into this house and rent by the room and do the furnished rentals that way. So I've had myriad different people who work for the airport, traveling medical professionals, people relocating to the area, on business trips, on internships, things like that. And I've set it out so that each room kind of has their own separate space and listing.
You've even had quite a few international people come and stay with you.
A lot. Yeah. Right now I have a Japanese guy and a Pakistani guy, and they're really cool and they share food with me.
I love that. We've had a few tenants like that we've landlorded for.
Yeah.
And anytime they share some of their culture, it tastes so good.
It's awesome. We make tea together. They're super fun. And if that's not winning, I don't know what is.
For sure. So I'm curious about the condo situation, like taking your pieces one at a time.
Yeah.
So how did that work? Did you own that condo or were you renting that condo that you were living in?
Mine I owned.
Okay. So then you owned it. You were arbitraging the one above you.
Right.
And then somewhere on that journey, a real estate investor came in and purchased the whole thing.
Yes.
So do you get to make that choice of whether you keep it or they just push you out? And how does that work?
Well, that's actually the occasion for renting my unit out as well. By our bylaws, we only needed 75% of the ownership in the building to vote yes in order for all of us to sell our units.
Okay.
I didn't have the option to keep it if we voted 75% yes. There was a bunch of work that needed to be done on the outside of the building that was going to be coming up as a special assessment, a significant special assessment. Mm. So on a financial level, it made a lot of sense for most of us. I was sad, but not that sad.
Okay. Now those steps have been taken potentially by the new owner and you're trying to get back in. Win-win for everybody.
It's awesome. They're really excited about it, actually. I was nervous to approach them again, but they're very excited.
Excellent. Was that a profitable sale for you?
Not very. I'd only been there for like 18 months. I made very little, but I didn't lose anything. Okay. And that I can say is a win for me. A lot of new owners in the building
did you 1031 much. Or just pay the taxes on it?
I didn't. I don't think I could because I didn't purchase it as a rental property. Maybe I could, but I purchased it as my primary home. Okay. I was advised by somebody that I couldn't do that. So the answer is no, but there was very little. I made very little anyway.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Today's episode is proudly sponsored by Furnished Finder, the ultimate platform for hassle-free midterm rentals. Whether you're a seasoned landlord or just getting started, Furnished Finder is the place for you. With Furnished Finder, you can say goodbye to booking fees and hello to direct bookings for 30-day plus days. It's a win-win for everyone involved. So if you're ready to experience the joys of midterm renting and take a load off your landlord's shoulders, head over to furnishedfinder.com today. We make it easy to get started. We're grateful to Furnished Finder for sponsoring this episode, and we're sure you'll love what they have in store for you.
So tell us some of the lessons that you've learned thus far in your house hacking journey. Like what's some of the advice that you would give to other people who are interested in going that route?
A lot of people do ask me about this, so I have answers. I could sit here and wonder for a long time. I house hack, but I also rent by the room. So I guess I'll speak specifically to like by the room, several different people living in the home at one time. So I have a labeling system because I'm very organized. I'm a manager, so I organize things and people and all the stuff. I have each of the bedrooms has a lockable door handle. It's like a code lock as opposed to, it has a key also, but I keep the keys and they have codes and I change the codes between guests. They have different codes to the keypad on the back door. To get in and out, which I also swap out between guests. That's something that a lot of people ask me about because, you know, some of the guests stay the same, some of the guests change. How do you deal with the locks and security in terms of letting people in? In the common areas, I also have things labeled. So in the refrigerator, room one has a little label on a few shelves in the door and in the big portion, whatever. And also in the pantry space. It's all labeled. So anything that's not labeled is fair game. It's shareable. It's just like any other furnished rental in terms of there are plenty of pots and pans and mugs and cups and plates and everything. And they've just got separate space. So if they want to use their own pot, sure. Like they can do that, but they can also use mine. And if they want kind of a protected, this is my space, they have that. They also are assigned a bathroom and a living room. I actually used what should have been a dining room, a large dining room, and made that a second living room. So each of them can log into their own streaming services and have their own separate space. You can sort of hear one TV from another room, but it's pretty separate and it makes it easy and no one's fighting over the couch. Avoiding fights is good. My house rules are up everywhere. No dishes in the sink overnight. So we're not having these issues with cleanliness and difference of opinion that way. And the only other thing I would recommend specifically off the top of my head is to work it in to have a cleaner come relatively regularly. You're going to have different people leaving at different times. Obviously, you'll need to turn their rooms, but the common areas and the bathrooms, I've saved myself quite a lot of headache in having a cleaner come in every so often, clean things up, restock a few things, and nobody's really worried about cleanliness and who left what mess.
Oh, that's great. I'm curious about some of those house rules that you have posted. So you shared one already. Yeah. What's some of the other ones?
Let's see. I should know them like the back of my hand. and I learned them all through experience. No shoes on in the house.
Okay.
No overnight guests. Just because there's a group of people, like each of your roommates has been background checked, but you don't know who they have over. And then it could be a lot of people. Quiet hours I have from 10 p.m. to 7 a.m. It's not really a house rule, but it's a reminder by the laundry machines, like to promptly move your laundry through so that whoever's next has access to the laundry. Those are all the ones I can think of, like no smoking, no parties, things like that. But, those are just kind of commonplace that you probably have anywhere.
I love those. Those are all really good. Thanks. I just started my room rental journey. So we're having our very first experience in our temple house. And so our first guest has been there a couple weeks and we've got one moving in soon. And so I reached out to all the three past room rental hosts that we've had on the show, like, give me your leases, give me your house rules. I need some help. And so now you've added some more to our portfolio of room rental experience. I love that.
Great. Well, if I can help you anymore, I would love to.
Yep. I'm sure you'll get plenty of questions down the road. So I think that you're in between, you got so much demand that now you're actually not in your house hack and it's still your primary and you're looking for a new house hack. But what stage of life are you in with your house hacking journey right now?
I'm reliving 2022 in only the good ways. I just today moved out of my house hack. I had so much demand for the summer, which was wonderful, but I didn't have enough rooms for everybody and I still won't. But I had been sort of waiting on something, I guess, to push me out of this one and having so much interest and demand and people who are living there right now who'd like to stay through the summer. I was like, man, I have this great opportunity here. Last year I went couch surfing, so I'm surfing again. I'm getting good at it. I'm staying with some friends. So I'll be out of the house hack. I'll fill the third and final bedroom. And I'm also looking, like I mentioned, to arbitrage again in the building that I used to live in.
You seem very lighthearted and joyful. So I feel like you just add a special presence to a house that not everyone would survive couch surfing, but you seem like you have that personality.
I have very patient friends. And I mind my own business. I think they can appreciate that.
Yep. And then you take all those house rules with you. You're like, I've learned how to be a good roommate and house guest. So I'm going to bring those wherever I go.
Yes. It's by experience for sure.
Good.
That's important.
Well, Katie, unless there's anything that you want to ask about her personal midterm rental journey, I'm going to transition us to the next session. Any last questions for this one?
Let's do it.
All right. So now the second part, we all have real estate portfolios that may or may not have good lighting at night. And I am one to say, sadly, I've got lots of houses that don't have great lighting at night. So I'm excited to hear Jillian's feedback and advice so that some of those things that maybe her company has already discovered by trial and error and just, you know, that, sorry, let me correct that. We all experience a lot of times by trial and error, but Jillian's company goes about it in a very thought out and planned way to make sure that your home is safer at night because of the lighting and placement of lighting and landscaping and that kind of stuff. So let's jump into that first, though, Jillian. Why don't you tell us about Nightlight? I think it's a family-owned business. How did it come about?
It was a merger of some older companies. And long story short, one of the primary owners for the last 30 years, he was a thought leader and an early adopter in the technology world. So when low voltage and LED lighting wasn't cool, the technology hadn't been perfected, everything turned blue and it was ugly and everybody hated it. He spearheaded and he said, this is the way of the future. We need to use less electricity. We need to be the ones to like test out and bring these products to the Chicagoland market. So Nightlight is, the full name is Nightlight Landscape Illumination. We're out of the Chicago suburbs and we service all of Chicagoland, as we call it. That is a real term. People challenge me on that all the time.
Chicagoland.
Chicagoland is a real thing, like Candyland. Southern Wisconsin, Southwestern Michigan. We've done a bunch of projects all over the country as well, but we follow where our relationships take us. But it came out of a man with a dream and who built a team of incredible installers and maintenance people. And you mentioned, you know, the average Joes among us, which I consider myself, learn a lot by trial and error. And we've, as a company, experimented through trial and error and maintaining and looking at products that did or didn't work or last over time in a brutal market. Outdoors is, you get the intense heat, you get the intense cold, wind, snow, all of it in Chicago. So we get to be the test dummy and all of that. So
give us some tips about how lighting can help to provide security for your rental.
So at Nightlight, we focus a lot on understanding what our clients' needs are around security, utility, and beauty. So we do bring all three of those facets together. A lot of times when people think of security lighting, they think, I have a motion detecting light outside of my back door, and if somebody walks in front of it, the light will flip on and blind them and scare them away. What we do as an approach, just because we think that's kind of ugly, it's great when people do it, but it's also a very reactive approach to somebody's already at my door right now, and now there's a light that's gone on. We like to take a more like preventative, deterrent, proactive approach. So we work a lot with landscape architects. Don't let that make you scared. You don't have to have a landscape architect, but it is in keeping with and thinking about the landscape in general. You can light up any landscape and make it much safer for you and your neighbors. We work with HOAs and single family homes and neighborhoods. So there's different, you know, focuses in either way. Let's say you're starting with a brand new slate and you've got a little lot, little yard. I would think about plantings, about where you want to put trees that are going to mature, where you're going to put hedges, bushes, just because those are spaces and fences as well. Those are spaces where folks can hide. Just imagine, like, if you were trying to rob somebody's house or get into somebody's house, what would you hide behind? When you look at your own yard and you think of those things, light them up. Like, you don't have to light them up like and make it really intense. You've got different wattage options. We use accent lighting. So those are lights that shine up from the ground that you see on a lot of the facades of homes. It could be on your home, the house itself. That's cool. Also up on like hedges. We have a lot of arborvitae hedges in Chicagoland, which are tall evergreen trees. People will light those up. Anything where you would hide behind it, stick a light on it. It's not that simple, but pretty much it's that simple. Any mature trees, we do a lot of moonlighting, which I'll talk about, downlighting that we call moonlighting, that I realize people who don't speak my language wouldn't appreciate that word. down lighting from trees as well, where it kind of washes the whole area with light, like a gentle light, so you can see, but it's not aggressive. So those are some of the options. A lot of what I've learned over time is that privacy fences can be a concern. I went to my local crime-free multi-housing seminar with the local police department to get my rental license in the area. And we talked a lot about both lighting and just layout, because both play a part. If you have a privacy fence, like a high privacy fence, that's where folks could just sneak around the outside. And it creates shadows even in your yard as well. Another hot tip that that I've learned a lot and experienced is planting bushes that will grow up to be large near your doorways and windows. I don't know if you've ever experienced walking out of your door or walking into your like door at night when there's a giant bush taller than you are. You're just like, it just gives a vibe. There was one.
A good vibe or a scary
a bad vibe?
A
scary vibe.
That's what I'm thinking.
I would run to my laundry room in my old building. There's like this huge evergreen bush that just got way out of hand. It was ginormous. It was 7 feet tall and it was really wide. And I'd go to the laundry room door and I'd have my key in my hand. There was light, but there was this creepy bush that somebody could be hiding around. I can't see. Like there's this big bush. So I would run down and like stick my key in the lock as fast as I could. Open it up, get in, shut the door as fast as I could. It makes you nervous. And it really is somewhere where people can hide. So the best advice I could give to somebody about lighting for security purposes, and you can totally have a motion detecting light. That is allowed too. You can have both. And I would think about sight lines. So from within your house, we talk to a lot of our clients who are nervous about security, or soon to be clients who are nervous about security, about the black glass effect, which is essentially it's gotten dark outside, you've got the lights on inside, and you look out your window and you just see black, just darkness. And I don't know about you, but if I'm sitting on the couch and I've got like windows in my living room off to one side and it's dark outside, I am pulling those shades down. That is scary as heck. People can see me and I can't see them. And the shades protect me from feeling weird. But if somebody's approaching the house, I want to know that. So for me, having the lighting outside and thinking about what can I see from my vantage point inside and what can't I see, considering those as lighting options. And then also, if you have neighbors, depending on your property, considering what could my neighbors see. So if you're somebody who wants to approach a property, rabbit, whatever, you don't want neighbors to see you creeping up on somebody's house. You don't want the people inside to be able to see you. If you eliminate places that are hidden, you can still have bushes and trees and fences and all the things, but with the right lighting, you can really eliminate that fear factor for us. But also it serves as a deterrent. If you're not the dark house on the block, you're not the house that's going to get hit.
Right. Lots of good tips. That's amazing. So now everyone's hearing it. They're getting motivated. Like, yes, improve my lighting. But where do I start? Do I do solar? Do I hire an electrician? Do I hire an architect, like a lighting architect? Where should they start? And is your company nationwide for consultation, or are you regionally focused on Chicago?
We're primarily regionally focused, but we do work nationally. So we're available and open to it. We tend, like I mentioned before, we tend to follow relationships. We have a lot of people who have second, third homes all over the country, and we'll even do installations elsewhere. So we can consult from afar as well. Where you can start. It's really as simple or as complicated as you want to make it. There are simple, like easy solutions such as putting coach lights on the front of your house, coach lights on your
garage. Okay, what's a coach light?
A coach light. A coach light is like it's mounted to the facade.
Is it the ones that go like two of them out like that? Yeah, what's a coach light?
No, she's just talking about like the lights next to your garage.
Like a sconce. Okay. Like a sconce you would have inside your house.
They can be pretty, right?
They're mounted. Yeah, they can be pretty. We tend to focus on hiding the fixture itself, but you can have beautiful fixtures. So we focus a lot on the effect rather than the fixture itself, but coach lighting, those can be really pretty. Those are mounted on the facade of your house or the facade of your garage. I have a space, I have a detached garage. So there's a space between my house and the garage, and I've got light on the front of the garage for that reason. You can do bistro lighting. I think we're going to talk about that a little bit.
Yes.
Over like gathering spaces, or Home Depot even has like decent options for lights that you could use to mount in the ground. They have a little stake on them and you can poke them in the ground and direct them up at your big tree or hedge or whatever.
So how do you get the electricity to those? Are you choosing solar a lot of times, or are you choosing to hire an electrician to do that?
We don't use solar, and we are a licensed electrician in-house. What they do sell, if you want to do it yourself, is a kit at Home Depot. There's a landscape lighting section, and that'll have all the wiring in it. So you should be able to plug it into like anything on the outside there, your house that has that little plastic bubble cover on it, a GFCI outlet somewhere, as long as the connection is protected, you can do it yourself. We recommend burying that wire as deep as you can. Here in Chicago, we have the freeze thaw heaving that happens. So over time, it'll push its way up to the surface. Or if you're edging garden beds or something in the springtime, getting your property ready to plant and everything, spades will cut right through it if you don't bury it deep enough.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So that's one of the things as a company who does this, we focus heavily on is burying it, but they do have lighting kits that you can get where the wire comes with it. So you can run it all the way to your house.
And what's the best way to bury it without tearing up your yard? Is there a way to still preserve the grass and get it buried deep?
Yes. So there's a few different options. It depends on like what your access looks like. We have a whole site review process, but let's say you're plugging into a GFCI outlet like at the side of your house and you can get around a patio or there isn't anything there. If you use a sharp spade, you can just cut straight down and just like wiggle it back and forth just to open up a little narrow wedge and just make a line. You can, and then once you're done, you just squish it back with your feet and water it. Yes. And there's almost never anything showing. Or you can go around the edges of patios, walkways, like just right close to the edge, and garden beds, like right around the edge of them. That tends to work really well. Just be careful of tree roots. Try to give trees a pretty wide breadth if you can.
I think the big lesson here is that lighting can really affect the security of your home if you're smart about it. But don't be afraid or intimidated to get some professional help like Jillian and Jillian's company here, because there are so many little tips and tricks and hacks that they've figured out through the years that we as landlords know how that works, right? We know that when everyone started years ago, if you've been in this for that long, that there's little things that make a big difference. Even if they're just these tiny little tips. So don't be afraid to invest in that, because doing it right, I assume, could take, you know, a good chunk of time. And we as investors or property owners, you know, time is money. So I think that's kind of like the underlying message that I'm hearing you say that I think is really valuable and important.
Yeah. And we'd be happy to help anybody who gives us a call try to figure it out on their own. Obviously, we think we're pretty good at it, installing it and the product line that we use and everything. Because I think what translates over to investors well is considering maintenance and how long things are going to last. You asked about solar. They tend to just die really soon. Like they fall over, they get kicked. Oftentimes, they're not made out of like a really resilient material. And it really depends on the climate that you live in terms of how much sun you get. So they tend to be not super effective here in Chicagoland, especially in the winter months. It really varies. So
even in Texas, that's one of my trial and errors is I've had some not so successful solar lights. One of them, the house we bought had the cute like solar bistro lights around the patio, and it was super cute, and they're solar. And so when we decided, okay, let's stay a night, see what it's like, see what we need to do, it was like it turned into a ghost house. The lights were flickering nonstop, and we couldn't figure out how to get the flickering to stop. And so we asked a neighbor who, it was a new purchase for us. Mm-hmm. And we asked a neighbor like, hey, how does this happen often? Like, what's the deal with these solar lights? Like, oh my goodness, they go off every night. It's terrible. So we had to take them down because they were placed in a heavily shaded area.
Okay.
So there wasn't really much light coming in, but why they were flickering nonstop like a ghost house, I have no idea. So
because it was haunted. That's the only explanation.
Any guests staying with me? No, it was not haunted. But one thing that, you know, we are saying this is an investment, and it is, you know, it's worth it not only for security, but also for the ambiance. I'm sure y'all have all noticed in the short-term rental market, there's a huge kick on those dusk photos that, you know, the professional images at dusk or at night to show just it's that ambiance that people want not only during the day, but in the evening as well, like lit up around the pool, around the house. And so have you done it? Has your company done any research, or Katie, you know, you have any facts here of does taking on projects like this actually improve the value and resale of your home? Like, is it an investment that will pay off in the long run for those reasons?
I can speak to that a little bit. I don't have numbers. I have anecdotal evidence.
Okay.
considering my experience with my home, which we'll talk about the lighting at my place, it's pretty simple, but I do have a handful of dusk photos that I will share with people for safety. I am a single young female, and I think understanding what it's going to look like in the evening is a big deal to other people who are new to the area. So I think for listing photos, when for your rentals, again, there's that sultry vibe of I've seen it in the daytime and now I see it in the evening, and it has a whole different experience considering selling a home. Similarly for photographing, but I don't know about the climates that you all live in, but when it gets to be winter months, a lot of home showings are after work for people. And starting in October and November after work, it is dark here.
Good point.
To be able to see, we have a lot of folks who invest a lot in their landscapes, so they want to show off the landscape specifically, but being able to see the home in the evening and being able to really give people a strong sense of what it looks like, how it feels, especially we're like a pretty heavily wooded, very green climate here too. So there's a lot of trees, there's a lot of shade, there's a lot of shadows at night. Being able to show people what it feels like and what it looks like after dark, and being able to take advantage of those hours mm-hmm. of the day gives the opportunity.
Yeah. Man, I'm always drawn to good lighting. It's like, oh, that's so beautiful. I want to do mine like that. And they'll see another one. Oh, I want to do mine like that.
Yeah.
I would think even if it doesn't affect the actual dollar value of the house, it's got to affect the interest and the appeal and, you know,
right.
how people are attracted to the listing photos or the photos for rental, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good point. I think back to the crime-free multi-housing seminar. I'm so proud of myself for saying that correctly over and over. We talked a lot about how we as investors, I have a single family home investing on this particular block. The way that my landscape and my lighting looks manicured, and I don't have the dark house on the block. Somebody driving up and down the street considering purchasing on that block can see somebody who's taking care of the outside of their home, or they would feel comfortable living next door to this house, or feel like other people are investing in that neighborhood together. The compound effect of others keeping up their lawns and having lighting and not being spooky and scary at night brings up the value because more people are interested and feel comfortable and safe moving into a neighborhood they've never been in.
Love it. Okay, so let's take about 5 more minutes for the last two sections. One, I have not mentioned yet. If you are very intrigued by the lighting conversation, I'm going to put Jillian's LinkedIn profile in the show notes on YouTube, because she has personally been a part of authoring and writing two pamphlets. One we've already discussed about a little bit. It's building security into the home project. And then the second, which we'll take a quick few minutes to talk about right now, which we all love, is Bistro Lighting Installation Guide. So if you want to read them in detail, just go to her LinkedIn profile on the show notes. But Jillian, let's take like just a couple minutes and say, what are some setbacks that people do wrong with bistro lighting? And what are some key, easy things to make sure and do it right?
Awesome. I can cover this quickly. We do a lot of fixing people's attempted bistro projects, and it's so sad. Again, you can make it as complicated or as easy as you want it to be. So planning, I would really emphasize. There are a handful of things you'd want to consider. Just kind of picture what you're trying to accomplish. If you've got a pergola or a covered deck or porch, something where there's rafters over the top, makes it pretty simple in terms of mounting. If you have an open, uncovered patio space with nothing around it, that's kind of a different story. So considering the space that you have in the first place, what you're trying to create. I think we've all been to that like Italian restaurant where you're inside and you're trying to read the menu and you're like, I can't see anything. And they've got the the bistro lights hanging over the top. And you're like,
yeah, they're not so good for that.
Yeah, it's not enough. There are options amongst bistro lights that you can get. Some really great ones you can purchase are at Costco. If you've got something that already has rafters, a space with rafters above it, I would use a smaller gauge, meaning a thinner wire where the bulbs are about 12 inches apart. You'll want to get a bigger, thicker gauge where they're about 24 inches apart if you're going to span a longer distance or over an open area, because you're going to want to mount them higher because they're going to swag down a little bit and there's going to be so much weight on the wire itself where there's nothing to like pin it to across a wide open space. Are you trying to create like a back patio? We're having a fire, just enough light barely? Or is this we're gathering for dinner, we want to make it the dining room outside? You want to think about how closely together you're zigzagging those wires, because as much as you tighten them up, the more light you're going to get. Where a lot of people go wrong is not checking if they have a safe and usable GFCI outlet nearby. If you do, that's awesome. You can plug things into that. I would avoid extension cords at all costs, just for they're a trip hazard. Water, that's a problem. And they can get unplugged sometimes, especially if you do trip on them. But if you have wind or moving anything, it causes trouble. So that's an investment I would recommend. A lot of people would benefit from just getting an electrician to come put a GFCI outlet close to where they want to hang them. So any connections you want to keep safe.
So how do you know if your plug is GFCI or not already?
I would assume, but verify, assume that any outlets outdoors are GFCI.
They usually are, but I think it's going to depend on your local like building code.
Yeah.
Right. But typically like, you know, they're the bigger ones with the buttons in the middle, but you know, I think that's probably varies from different area to different area, but
yeah,
state. It's worth a check.
Yeah. It's worth a check.
And then I just have two things to add in. One, you mentioned the Italian restaurants and how when you don't have enough lighting, you're like, you can't read the menu. Oh, it made me think of my mom. She, every time there's not enough light wherever we are, she pulls out her iPhone flashlight and starts turning down. Like, Mom, you're blinding me. Like, please control that thing. So yes, lighting is important for that reason.
But then Kelly, that kind of circles back to your point, which is, what's the goal of your lighting, right? Is it for security, where you want to blind someone, or is it for a nice ambiance, which maybe you don't. So like, just, you know, back it up and think about what your goals are there, people.
Yep, exactly. And then what about broken bistro bulbs? I know that that happens pretty often. Is there a way to prevent that with storms and things?
With storms, to some degree, it is what it is. A lot of it has to do with mounting. We replace a lot of broken bulbs, but there are some things you can do preventatively, not altogether. But the higher you hang them, usually that's a good option where there's not going to be a lot like blowing across. If you've got patio furniture, if they're really low, sometimes it gets like, we have high winds. I don't know what happens where you live, but high winds where like patio furniture will get blown around. It'll catch on things. A lot of people have outdoor kitchens with fans and TVs that pivot and stuff like that. So you're going to want to like stay clear of all of that. Other than that, just making sure that it's not going to swing too much. So the tautness of the lines, which has a lot to do with what you mount it to. So you can mount it to the siding on your house as long as you seal around it. Don't put holes in your siding, because I said that. But also, if you're mounting it to a newly planted tree, like a not a mature tree, sometimes over time, the weight will pull the tree over and then it'll start to hang down lower and then they'll swing a lot more. They'll hit each other. The same goes for posts. If you decide to install a post across your patio so you can run it from the house to the post and back to the house again, the higher that you mount it, the sturdier the post and the base that you're going to want to have, because I can't tell you how many like 4x4 posts I've seen just kind of like falling with the weight of them over time.
We actually have that set up in our backyard. We have a post, but we had it professionally installed and that's cemented in the ground and it's not going anywhere. So
you need that
footing. I would say was worth the investment with some landscapers.
Yeah. And they do it all the time. They can do it so quick. It's in, you're done, and you're on your way.
Well, this has been such a great conversation. And I think it's been fun to talk about and to think about lighting from both kind of the decorative and the value add side and the security side, because there's a lot on both.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Lots of great tips. So let's take 1 minute to finish out this episode with part three, which is how have you implemented it at your personal home that you are, that you have house hacked and are now renting out by the room completely.
Right. Well, I thought of it again from the perspective of a young female living in the home, and I live on a dark block. It's unincorporated, so we don't have street lamps. So it's dark if you don't put any lights on it. Looking out my front living room window, I have a downlight, or what we call a moonlight, out of a mature tree in the front yard. It shines down like a really gentle light over the front parking spot and the whole front yard, so I can see out onto the street and my neighbors can see my front yard. Then I also have a very dark side driveway. It goes along the side of my house to the two-car detached garage in the back. And that was very dark. So I have a light on the peak shining down on the driveway. That wouldn't concern me other than my front door is right there and it's just an abyss of blackness next to it. I have a coach light on the front of my detached garage that shines down on that space between the garage and the back door that I would like scurry through really fast before I had any lighting in the yard. Another, again, gentle downlight from my eave of my, the back of my house onto my patio. That one's a little bit brighter because it's closer to the ground, and one accent light on an ornamental tree in the back corner of my property so I can see the whole backyard and the whole front yard and the side.
Nice. Well, this has been so fun talking with you about your portfolio, about lighting. And I think each one of you that have thought, okay, I need better lighting at my houses, don't just let this episode pass you by. Go ahead and take some action, call an electrician, get that kit from Home Depot. Just get started where you need to add security through lighting to your home. And Jillian, if there's any links that you want to provide us that might be good tools that someone can, you know, action steps in the show notes, then whatever you send me, I'm going to put in the show notes as well.
Awesome. I have some how-tos I can share.
Love that.
Well, thank you so much for being here, and we've really enjoyed our time with you.
Thank you both for having me. Have a good one.
Thank you.
Bye, everyone. Have a great day. And if you love this episode, don't forget to like, subscribe, and we would love your reviews on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Have a great day.